Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle.
GE 2020, an election like never before. All that, of course, due to COVID-19. So gone are, you know, the big rallies at stadiums or outdoor events. Gone are candidates going around in huge groups to meet and mingle with people. Things, of course, limited. Parties have been asked to campaign digitally in that sense. The candidates are being watched over social media. Every post that they put up will be looked upon closely by members of the public. But will social media and the internet play an important role in the eventual results? Well, according to a survey by the Institute of Policy Studies on internet and media use during GE 2015, it was suggested that candidates' Facebook posts and Instagram photos may have been key talking points during the recent general election, but social media did not play a decisive role. In fact, it was found that 79% of the 2,000 citizens of voting age surveyed used social media to some extent, but hardly anyone did so in isolation. So how will that change this year, GE 2020? And will social media and the internet play a bigger role in this different election, so to speak? Well, on the line with me this morning is Carol Soon, who is Senior Research Fellow, Institute of Policy Studies, Lee Kuan Yew School of Public Policy, National University of Singapore. Carol, good morning. How are you?
Hi, good morning, Elliot. Thank you for having me.
Thanks a lot for taking the time. So 2015, you did a study on the internet and media use during GE 2015. And you found that that general election in 2015 was, in a way, like the general election before in 2011. It was not a social media election. Why was that the case for 2015? Because, I mean, if you think about it, social media, it was already quite a huge thing 5 years ago.
I think that is a very important question. So if we look at the internet, one of the advantages that's offered by the medium is it enables people to have access to a wide range of information sources. So there is the assumption that when people have access to more information sources, they will be exposed to perspectives and ideas that are different from their own and will then consider different viewpoints before arriving at an informed decision. So then that means there is an expectation of persuasion, right?
Right.
So one of our findings for general election 2015 was that close to 50% of the people surveyed made up their minds on whom to vote for even before nomination day. So what does this imply, right? This implies that whatever people did online then during campaigning time kind of reinforced their existing positions and preferences. Now, another reason why we caution against being technologically utopic is that our survey found that people's online engagement for 2015 was low. Now, another expectation of the internet and the social media is that they will mobilize people to take action for causes such as showing support and galvanizing other people. So in the context of an election, there is an assumption that social media will enable people to show their support for parties and candidates and persuade others to do the same. So what we found then was that people's online participation was low, and even when they engaged in online activities, they took part in what we call passive ones that did not require much effort or commitment. So what do I mean by passive activities, right? Some examples would include following a blogger or a YouTuber and sharing information. Now, these are very different from activities that require more effort and perhaps a show of political conviction. And examples of those would be writing a post, making a video, and starting a discussion thread.
Right. So in a way, what we saw in 2015, everything on social media was nothing more than a reinforcement tool in that sense.
Yes, I mean, that's definitely an indication that came out from our findings. Yes, and political participation online was also low.
You know, social media tends to be known as a place for news and sometimes, you know, fake news. So if it was not social media, based on 2015, what were the top three most trusted sources for election news? And how do you see that changing for this election?
Well, going back to 2015 again, our survey found that the top three media which were most used during election time were TV, print newspapers, and online websites of Singapore mainstream media. Now, not only were mainstream media most used during that election, they were also more trusted. So fast forward 5 years, do we expect things to be different? Well, more recent studies, and these are studies that's not just conducted in Singapore, but also globally, these studies found that social media such as social networking sites and instant messaging platforms are becoming the go-tos for people when they seek information. So even before the GE, and we're talking about 2020 general election, we are already seeing shifts in people's information and news consumption habits. Now, however, one thing to note, though, compared to mainstream or legacy media, social media generally still perform lower in terms of trust.
Wow, that is quite interesting.
I mean, it's interesting, but I think it's also quite expected, given especially, you know, the spread of fake news and false information, particularly in these kind of platforms in the past couple of years, which could have put people, hopefully and rightfully so, on their guard when they peruse information on social media platforms.
Okay, my next statement is speculative. I want to qualify, but there is a possibility, I mean, even though the survey has not been done yet, there is a possibility we could see something similar, that some kind of a decision has already been made even before nomination day where selection is concerned, or party selection is concerned, from the voter. Is that possible?
Well, I mean, certainly there's a possibility, but there is still a chance, you know, depending on what happens during the hustings, how clearly and persuasively political candidates and parties explain themselves and present their party manifestos, that we still have the undecided voters, those in the middle ground who could be your swing voters.
Fair enough. And again, I want to qualify that that was speculative. We haven't done the survey for this year yet. We do not know, right? So fair enough. But this year, we've already seen some e-rallies. It's very different because, you know, there is, I guess, the physical disconnect. What do you see as some of the challenges that parties are facing with this whole idea of digital campaigning?
So, yes, 2020, some are wondering if this is going to be the truly internet election. And again, we will see. But there are a few things that we should take note of and not be too, you know, technologically deterministic in how we expect the outcomes to be, right? So the fact that a huge part of parties' campaigning efforts have moved online due to COVID-19 has led to information seeking becoming much easier for voters. So there is a pressure for political parties and candidates to be visible online, and that pressure is stronger, right? So the parties, especially the bigger and more well-resourced ones, we are seeing turning to multiple social media and instant messaging platforms. Now, the other thing to note is that technology has evolved. So, like you asked me at the beginning, in 2015, social media was already taking off in a big way. So why the lack of a, you know, transformative effect because of social media? Yes, in 2015, we have Instagram, we have Facebook, but certain features were less developed or non-existent. Today, the social media space is awash with instant stories and videos. So what do we see, right? Parties and candidates are being a lot more experimental and bold with their publicity and engagement efforts. They use different formats and approaches to target different segments of the electorate.
Okay.
So there is a clear recognition among parties, I think, which is a good sign, that voters have very different needs when they seek information. So longer sessions like e-rallies, panel discussions such as PAP Straight Talk and Workers' Party, the Hammer Show, would appeal to voters who have the time and interest to learn details about a party's proposals for the constituency and the country. And then there are voters who prefer bite-sized information from videos and instant stories. So I think a very keen, nuanced understanding of the target audience and how, you know, unique different strokes for different folks really is very important. And given that we have a very, very short campaign period, the learning curve is actually very sharp.
To be fair, it is a marketing game in that sense, because you have to have these little bits of data to sort of help drive your online campaign if you are coming up with one. Carol, if I may, with an increase in social media presence or online presence, you will also have the other side, which is enforcement. So take, for example, you've got POFMA that was recently put in place, and we have seen a couple of instances where POFMA has been utilized during this GE. Now, I don't want to go into the details of those cases, but I do want to ask, is there a possibility that something like POFMA will hinder social media's role in this election?
Yeah, I know. This is an important question, right? But, okay, I mean, certainly leading up to the election, there were many concerns about the potential impact of POFMA on election campaigning or in public discourse. But it really, if we look at the current volume and the wide range of social media content that's being put out on the current election, I mean, there's just so much, right? Especially with things moving online. So given the huge volume that's being produced and shared on social media, doesn't seem that POFMA has stifled people's social media use. In fact, what we're really seeing is a very new, relatively new development that puts this GE a bit different from the previous, right? So this GE, we are seeing new forms of citizen participation. So besides the usual sharing, retweeting and forwarding of information, we're seeing, okay, number one, a lot more meme production. But more importantly, there is very interesting progress made in terms of the efforts people are putting in. So we see students, cartoonists, illustrators and interest groups, right, creating content to educate fellow voters, such as the first-time voters, on the election. So some examples would be cape.sg, grandfather story, and the 9 days hashtag GE2020. So what are citizens doing? They're summarizing manifestos, they are telling people what the history of Singapore elections is about, and they're also organizing forums on their own, targeting first-time voters to educate them. So these are examples of higher-order political participation, which doesn't seem to have been dampened by POFMA. Now, the applications of POFMA in the past week do what the Act does set out to do, which is to protect and safeguard democratic processes such as the election. Now, that said, the responses online do suggest that if used too much, POFMA may create a perception of unfair play among some segments of the population.
Right, so it's got to be careful of perception that it creates as much as it needs to be careful of enforcement. I am speaking with Carol Soon, the Senior Research Fellow, Institute of Policy Studies, Lee Kuan Yew School of Public Policy at National University of Singapore. Carol, this next question is really about job security. Social media, without a doubt, will increase in terms of influence or as a tool, especially when you have things like elections. So looking ahead into the future, maybe 5 or even 10 years from now, 2 elections from now, old school media like print, radio, or even TV, do you think it loses its relevance when it comes to national elections? And you know, it doesn't have to just relate here to Singapore, but worldwide as well.
I think that's really a timely question, because if we look at, you know, the common term is disruption, technological disruption, right? So no one is spared, including news media and journalism. So what we are seeing worldwide right now, and it's a challenge that is not faced only by the media in Singapore, is this grappling with the shift in consumer habits and also, you know, the need to kind of transform how journalism is done, how media is operated, right? So I think at the end of the day, besides the technical aspects of, you know, keeping on top of the game on the part of media organizations, what is also important is at the end of the day, you need to maintain the trust factor and the credibility factor, right? So there is a tangible part that needs to be done, okay, which is how do you reach out, how do you transform your reporting and operation strategies to keep up with a audience that is moving online and as a result of that changing their news reading and consumption habits. Mm-hmm. But on the intangible part, there are attributes such as credibility and trust that will continue, you know, to help sustain the relevance and the importance of what we call legacy media.
Definitely something for legacy media to think about. But on the side of the consumer and the information providers, I mean, if you were to look at our GE 2020 and look out ahead into the rest of the world, I mean, Japan will have elections next year. Shinzo Abe finishes his term in September. Where do you think Singapore is when it comes to using social media as a source of influence when it comes to politics or elections? Are we behind, or are we, you know, on par with some of the more developed countries?
No, I think in terms of, if you're talking about the context of election campaigning, like what I mentioned earlier, looking at the current developments and campaigning efforts by the parties for this election, we are seeing quite a fair bit of experimentation. But then again, I think one thing that would be consistent, you know, is that the so-called reinforcement effects, right? When the internet became really popular in the 1990s. There was just so much expectations and hopes pinned on the internet to be the next democratization tool. This appliance everywhere, yeah, including the US, what we call Western liberal democracies, right? But what research has shown over and over again is, you know, while technology can have a transformative effect, it's also mediated and sometimes muted by what we call the reinforcement effect. So one example would be the fact that, you know, maybe smaller parties with less resources may not be able to harness digital technology to the same ability as the bigger resources, which then continue to kind of re-entrench their position, right? And the other thing is that we are also seeing the potential filter bubble effects, the echo chamber effects. So even for this general election, my colleagues and I who are doing a study on the election, you know, we are closely following the online campaigning activities that different parties are engaging in. And we notice, we can't help but to notice, that if you look at the comments page for various parties, we see a very strong presence, right, of supporters, which suggests that parties could be reaching out to the converted. But that said, what is also true globally is a large part of the online audience tend to be quite passive in nature. So when we go online, most of the time, most of us are reading, watching, and surveilling. So there is also the possibility we have undecided voters and people who are in the middle ground who are listening in and looking out for information that will help them form an impression of the candidate's quality and the party's potential.
Okay. I've been speaking with Carol Soon, Senior Research Fellow, Institute of Policy Studies, Lee Kuan Yew School of Public Policy at the National University of Singapore. Carol, thank you so much for taking the time. Take care and stay safe, yeah?
Thank you, Elliot.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.